This is Jordan Seculo. Today on Jay Seculo Live, the Border Patrol apprehends the largest illegal immigrant caravan ever, and the left questions whether there's a crisis at our southern border.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
And just think about that for a moment, folks. When we're debating whether or not a wall should be built, and even private groups are raising money to build their own sections of the wall, and you've got states filing lawsuits to prevent President Trump from building the wall, which he promised the American people he would do. You have stories like this, which just remind us about why we need more border security, why we need physical barriers, why, yes, it's great that the drones likely picked up this largest group ever, over 1,000 people, but then they had to be apprehended, which took a lot of manpower. And now where do they go? That's a humanitarian crisis. So you see how, while technology can help identify large movements of people, when you have the single largest in history, in recorded history, apprehension at the southern border, 1,000 plus people, it's a humanitarian crisis. It's not right that our country is not better prepared to handle these individuals. And it's not right that Mexico is allowing this to happen. These are not Mexicans. I think that has to be made clear. This is the Mexican government allowing Central Americans to move through Mexico and try and cross through our southern border. This was in that El Paso area. And again, not trying to go through some border crossing, not trying to claim asylum, but trying to just get in illegally. And Than, this comes at the same time when the president has said he's had enough of what Mexico has been not doing, and he's going to start putting on tariffs on Mexican-made goods that come into, that are imported into America, starting at a smaller percent, but that can increase over time throughout the summer.
Yeah, Jordan, it's the latest example, I think, of the president saying to the American people that he's going to do what it takes to fix this problem, to actually address it. Look, nobody likes tariffs. They're akin to taxes on retailers, but you're going to have to endure some short-term pain to get this problem fixed. And Jordan, I also think it's very important for us to point out the juxtaposition of the two parties in Washington, D.C., what they're doing to try to fix this problem. You've got the president conducting all of these apprehensions, doing what it takes to get tough on Mexico. And by the way, the Mexican president immediately said, I'm going to send my officials up to Washington to try to work this out. So I think he got their attention. But Jordan, I also think it's important to point out what House Democrats are doing. House Democrats next week, Jordan, they're not helping with these apprehensions. They're not helping address the border crisis. Jordan, they're going to put forward a bill called the American Dream and Promise Act. You know what it does? It sets forward a bunch of categories that cannot be deported, even though the law says that they can be. So, Jordan, they're trying to exacerbate the problem while the president is yet again trying to do what it takes to get the crisis under control.
Folks, we'll take your calls on this, 1-800-684-3110. We're also, yesterday we focused in on the 2020 presidential candidates, the Democrats, who are now the 24 so far who have declared their candidacies, who will be trying to get on that debate stage in Miami next month, less than a month away. We broke that down for you, the top kind of leading candidates, who could be a come-from-behind candidate, what we expect to see in the short term and in the long term as well, who's had a good kind of a start to their campaign, who's had to restart their campaign. Today, while we talk about this border issue, we're going to also focus in on the Senate races, critical Senate races that will make up, again, the United States Senate. And let's say Donald Trump gets reelected. Well, it's very important that we've got senators there who are going to support his judicial nominees, support his policies, and that they're not going to be rhinos who keep Obamacare in place. Remember, we've had that problem that we had to deal with. We were right on the cusp of getting rid of Obamacare, and that didn't happen because of a Republican in name only. So again, going through these key Senate races, very important. We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Do you live in one of those battleground Senate race states? We want to hear from you, 1-800-684-3110. We'll talk to you in just a moment.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Discussing two major issues today. One, and we will continue to get into throughout the show, is kind of the 2020 Senate landscape. What senators are up for re-election? How many seats are up? Remember, unlike the House, the Senate is staggered because they have six-year terms. So this time around, there will be 34 senators or seats up, some are vacant, up for re-election. 22 are Republican, or Republican currently. 12 are Democrat. We're going to walk through which ones are most competitive, what's most likely to switch, what's most likely, again, to kind of stay the same, and where will that likely leave the Senate? Right now, the Senate stands at 53 Republicans and 47 Democrats. And again, the vice president can always be, because the Republican can be a tie-breaking vote, helping Republicans if they need to get over the hurdle to 51. We're also cannot ignore the story on immigration, because it is just shocking. Over 1,000 illegal immigrants were apprehended in the El Paso sector yesterday, the largest single group ever at one time. Ever at one time. Now, there's not a wall there. I'm sure drones were used so that the officials were there to apprehend them. I mean, that had to be a lot of Border Patrol agents to apprehend over 1,000 people. Now, there are repercussions coming for Mexico. Specifically, the president immediately announced that there will be tariffs put in place on Mexican goods. And I will get your thoughts on this, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. To me, it's just this idea that we don't have a crisis is so absurd. Every Democrat running for office, every politician running for office should be asked about whether they support a wall, these physical barriers, because this is just out of control. 1,000-plus people apprehended in a single day. A single day. Think about the humanitarian crisis that occurs after the apprehension. You got to deal with children. You may have pregnant women. You may have people who are sick, who are elderly, who have made this dangerous crossing and are now in U.S. custody, and you've got to figure out, and they're not from Mexico. Here's why the president is issuing tariffs on Mexican goods. It's because Mexico is allowing Central Americans, so south of Mexico, to pass through Mexico to try and enter the U.S. illegally. These were not a group of people trying to claim asylum. These were just illegal immigrants, a large caravan ever, the largest ever apprehended. I'm sure there's been bigger groups that have gotten through, unfortunately, but this is the largest one that's ever been apprehended. So here's what the president has said will happen. President Trump said Thursday the U.S. would impose escalating tariffs on all Mexican imports to the U.S. beginning June 10th in an effort to push the country to deter the flow of asylum-seeking Central American families to the southern border. Reacting to what he described as, quote, Mexico's passive cooperation, like we're saying, they're not stopping any of these people from coming to our southern border in allowing this mass incursion, president said the tariffs on America's third largest trading partner would begin at 5%, but grow steadily, hitting 25% by October 21st unless Mexico takes satisfactory action to halt the migrants. So there is a way, Than, for Mexico to correct this problem, even prevent these tariffs from going into place, especially the tariffs that will be higher, because, again, it affects everybody, it affects Americans, it affects, but it really would put a huge impact on the Mexican economy, which is very dependent on imports to the U.S.
Yeah, let me start with this, Jordan. I think the Democrats in Washington, if they had family members that were part of the Border Patrol, Jordan, I think they would realize that this is a crisis. Think about the dangerous situation that we're sending those agents into to apprehend a group, a caravan, let's call it a caravan, of more than 1,000 illegal migrants. That is a very dangerous situation to put themselves in. It's nothing less than a crisis. But you're right, Jordan. Taking this tariff step, this is a pretty big step. I mean, nobody likes to invoke tariffs. They cause economic pain on both sides of the borders. It's not something I know the president wants to do, but I think he feels like he had no choice. And I will tell you this, it's going to be controversial in Washington, D.C. because of that economic pain, but it got the attention of the Mexican president. I mean, he sent a letter to President Trump. He doesn't like the tariff. He wants to talk about it. But Jordan, what did he do? He immediately dispatched a diplomatic team to Washington, D.C. and requested a conference with the president to try to work it out. I think that's what President Trump was after. He doesn't want to have to impose these tariffs, no. But he needed to do something to get Mexico's attention. He can't just keep sending our Border Patrol down to apprehend more than 1,000 people at a time, Jordan. That's a recipe for disaster.
And I think some of these, even Republican senators who are criticizing this tariff move, don't understand the president's play here, as Than just laid out. The play here is to get the Mexican government's attention, that we're not just going to keep talking about this and saying, please fix this, please do something. That we are willing to very much damage your economy and even take a little bit of a hit of our own. But it'll be a little bit for us. It'll be a huge hit on Mexico since they are so reliant on importing goods to the U.S. So we're not going to just talk. We now have an action plan in place. But what happens when you put those plans in place with a date? You get the talking to begin, real talks to begin. So the Mexican president has sent his top foreign diplomat to Washington, D.C. today. So, I mean, Than, for me, I think these senators need to sit back a little bit and let the president do what he does best, which is using the power of the presidency, setting out, again, not saying tariffs start today, but using the power of the presidency to say, this is what will happen if you don't fix it, and here is how bad it will get over time, and then suddenly the Mexican government takes it seriously and is dispatching their top foreign diplomat.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I do think you will largely see that on the Republican side of the aisle. You saw Senator Ron Johnson, who's the chair of the Homeland Security Committee, say essentially that. He said, I don't like tariffs, but I totally understand what the president is doing. And he has the responsibility to secure our borders. So he's got to use the tools that are available to his disposal. One other point, Jordan, I mean, this is a tariff authority that Congress has given to the president. So clearly at one point when it passed Congress, they saw that he might have to use this at some point in the future. And again, Jordan, I think this is the appropriate time to juxtapose it with the approach from the other side. The approach from the other side, the House Democrats, they're going to put a bill on the floor that would actually stop the president from being able to deport those who are lawfully eligible for deportation. So one side in Washington, D.C. is putting forward a plan that would exacerbate the problem. The other side, led by President Trump, is trying to get a handle on it so that we can secure our border and then move forward.
You know, here is Senator Ron Johnson, as Than just mentioned. He was talking to Fox News about just this unbelievable crisis. And give us a call about this. So we 1-800-684-3110. The tariff issue, how President Trump is handling it, how Democrats are ignoring it. We want to hear from you, 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Here's Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin.
The situation is completely out of control. In just the first 8 months of this fiscal year, 400,000 individuals have crossed the border illegally and been apprehended coming in as either an unaccompanied child or as a member of a family. If we continue at May's pace, it'll be 800,000 before the end of the year, fiscal year 2019. Now, that compares to 120,000 people in 2014 when President Obama declared a humanitarian crisis. So again, 120,000 in 2014, 400,000 in 8 months, and this pace continues. It could be as many as 800,000 people in just 1 year.
I mean, that to me, Than, those numbers, I mean, Ron Johnson is, again, someone who, again, is very, sets the record straight with these numbers. He's from a state, too, that is not the one suffering probably the most in Wisconsin, but realizing that this is a crisis for our entire country, and that if you're an elected official, you're responsible. And it doesn't matter if you're from Wisconsin or Texas or New Mexico or California or Arizona, that you're responsible as an elected official to come up with solutions on this. The problem is, Than, as you pointed out in the break, but I want you to point out again, is that Democrats are unwilling to even address this.
Yeah, well, first of all, it just can't be sustained, Jordan. I mean, the system is under attack. It's being swamped. And no matter how much attention the president gives to it, if something is not done to secure the border, you just can't possibly keep up with these type of numbers. And yeah, Senator Johnson's from Wisconsin, but as the chair of the Homeland Security Committee, Jordan, he knows this problem as well as anyone. And he's willing to put aside policy preferences to address this because he realizes it's a crisis. But you're correct, Jordan. Not everybody in Washington, D.C., by a long shot, is willing to do that. In fact, next week in the House, we've said it a few times, but I'm going to keep saying it because it's important. House Democrats are actually trying to block Border Patrol and ICE from deporting those who are eligible for lawful deportation. Several categories, DACA eligible folks, temporary permanent protective status, TPS, and several others. Jordan, just if you're going to boil it down to a sort of one takeaway, one side is trying to get their arms around this problem and secure the border. The other side is actually trying to tie the hands of those who have a sacred obligation to secure the border and trying to prevent them from doing what is required of them under the law. Two very different approaches, and frankly, it's time for Democrats in Washington, D.C. to get on board and be a part of the solution here.
When we come back, we will start taking your calls. 1-800-684-3110. Phone lines are open. 1-800-684-3110. I know some of you are already hanging on the line to comment on this single largest apprehension in history. Over 1,000 illegal border crossers apprehended at one time yesterday. And people act like there's not a crisis. We'll talk about, too, the Senate races, because that will have a huge impact on this as well. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
You know, guys, talking to my producers, there was a Border Patrol officer just on Fox News. Get his soundbite. He was talking about how, one, they're facing a caravan every single day, and two, that just in April, which is where the numbers are right now, so we haven't gotten the May numbers yet, still May 31st, just in April, there were 109,000, so nearly 110,000 people who were detained or apprehended trying to cross into the country illegally. That is a major humanitarian crisis. That's in a month. 1 month. And then yesterday in one day, over 1,000. And yet this is what the Mexican... I'm glad that the Mexican president is sending his foreign minister because of the tariff threat. And let me tell you something. Dealing with Pastor Brunson's release from Turkey... When the president and vice president threatened tariffs on Turkey, and then soon after, Pastor Brunson was released from Turkey and returned home to the United States. Sometimes the threat of tariffs works on its own. Now, sometimes you're dealing with a China-type country. They may be more of a superpower. Mexico's not. Mexico relies so much on the U.S. Economy and on importing, on exporting goods into the U.S. But here's what the Mexican president said. You know, he's dispatching his top person. That's great. I hope this gets fixed. I don't want tariffs on Mexican goods. It's not good for us. It's not good for the Mexican economy. It's not good for anybody. But it's much worse for Mexico than it is for the United States, especially how it starts out. And we're already seeing manufacturing leave Mexico, car manufacturers leaving Mexico as well because of incentives in the United States. But in the letter to the president, and I'd love to get Than's comment on this, then we'll get to your phone calls. We will get to those Senate races, too. Remember, we got a second half hour coming up the broadcast. We can really get into politics of all of this. In the letter from the president of Mexico yesterday to President Trump in response to the tariff threat after this apprehension of 1,000-plus migrants who were not Mexican. Remember that as I read this statement. So this is to President Trump from the Mexican president. You are also aware that we are fulfilling our responsibility to stop immigration as effective as possible and without violation to any human right through our country. It is worth remembering that within a short period of time, Mexicans will not need to migrate into the United States and that migration will become optional, not compulsory. This is because we are fighting corruption, the main problem in Mexico, as never before. This is how our country will become a powerful nation with a social dimension. Our countrymen and women will be able to work and be happy where they are born, where their relatives, their traditions, and their cultures are. That is all wonderful and great, and I hope that happens for Mexico, which is facing, in certain areas of Mexico, some serious still criminal activity with drug cartels. But Than, he misses the entire point. We're not talking about Mexican illegal immigrants. And I hope our audience understands that too. It's not Mexican illegal immigrants. It's illegal immigrants coming from south of Mexico, from Central America, that Mexico is allowing to pass through. So he is ignoring in his letter to the president the real problem.
Jordan, I guess they're fulfilling their responsibility, except for the roughly 109,000 that passed through their country on the way to the U.S. southern border just last month and at a pace that's been going for a few months now. Other than those 109,000, maybe they're fulfilling their responsibility. You know, another line in here, Jordan, that really bothered me a lot. He took a couple of shots at the president's policy. He says, "With all due respect, even though you have the right to express it, the slogan America First is a fallacy because until the end of time, even over national borders, universal justice and fraternity will prevail." Jordan, I'm pretty sure that's not the policy of the president of the United States. But I will tell you this, even with all of those rhetorical flares and maybe subtle jabs at the president, the conclusion of the letter is really what's important. He got all of his political statements in, but then he said, "In conclusion, I propose you to instruct your officials, if it is within your interest, to receive the representatives of my government, led by the Secretary of Foreign Affairs of Mexico, who will travel to Washington beginning from tomorrow to seek for an agreement for the benefit of the two nations." So Jordan, he said all of that, but then what did he do? He sent his top foreign diplomat to try to work this out. Jordan, that was what President Trump was after. He wanted Mexico to come to the table and work out an agreement with him to address this crisis.
And now they are coming to the table. Let's go to Petri calling from California on line one. Certainly a state dealing with this crisis as well. Petri, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
You know, this is such a serious subject that I need some kind of joke that take the edge off, but I can't, you know, because
no, it's not Democrats.
No, it isn't. And the left wing biased media with all the dumb Democrats, they're just going to pick apart Donald Trump's statement, and none of the words are going to matter. They're going to tear it apart with some fact checking baloney about, oh, the 90% of drugs coming across the border. Oh, that's another lie that Trump's come up with. And every other thing that he said, they're just going to dismiss and call lies. More lies out of Trump's, and they're going to throw the fear-mongering word in there, and they'll probably rehash the manufactured crisis baloney when the true crisis is our government, the Congress, how they fight each other, and they just want to keep on ignoring the problem year after year after decade after decade, and that's the real crisis, is the idiocy. We've got a crisis of idiocy in the United States government with the Congress because they can't pull it together to understand this with seriousness.
Well, the truth is, Stan, Petri is right. Congress could handle this problem and just send it to the president's desk for signature. It doesn't have to be the president having to take the lead on all this. It could be Congress doing their job, legislating, smart legislating to handle this crisis, and the president's willing to work with him and then put it on his desk. He signs it. Instead, they are putting all of the burden on the president of the United States and then complaining about the actions he takes.
Yeah, in truth, Jordan, this is a shared responsibility under the Constitution. The president has the duty to secure the borders and to use the military and the resources available to the government to do that. But, Jordan, the Constitution gives the Congress the authority to fund the requisite programs, including the Department of Defense, including the Department of Homeland Security, including the funds necessary to secure the border. Jordan, they have not been willing to partner with the president on that. The president has put forward a number of plans, and he has included in several of those proposals the highest priorities of the Democrat Party in Washington, D.C. is willing to fund some of their priorities in order to address this problem. Democrats in the House just have not been willing to come to the table and pass any kind of a package to address this program. But next week, I'm going to say it again, Jordan, next week, they're going to come together and they're going to pass a package that does not include any money for border security or addressing this crisis. But they are going to come to consensus that they should tie the hands of the border security and we should not be able to deport those who are eligible for lawful deportation. So, Jordan, not only are they not coming together to work with the president, they are actually at this point working against him. That's got to end. Until that ends in Washington, D.C., Jordan, inside the Congress, this is going to be something the administration is going to have to fight on their own.
It is so frustrating, as Stan just walked through, what the Democrats are willing to put forward and ignore. I mean, and then even some Republicans, I mean, are complaining about the president taking action on tariffs. I don't think they're understanding the reality is that we're just trying to get the Mexicans to take this seriously, which they are by dispatching their foreign minister, that we can't have 100,000 plus people in a month illegally crossing that we're apprehending and then having to deal with them. That we can't deal with 1,000 people in one day that we're having to apprehend, and yet they think that a border wall is somehow a violation of human rights or inhumane. But what's going to happen to those 1,000 people? You think they're in really humane conditions right now that have been apprehended just yesterday? I don't think so, because it's such a difficult situation. We're putting our Border Patrol in an impossible situation. Second half hour coming up on Jay Sekulow Live.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Last night, the single largest apprehension of illegal immigrants on our southern border in history. Over 1,000. They weren't from Mexico. They were from Central America. And the president told Mexico, it's time to take action. If you don't, we're going to start putting tariffs on the goods that you export to the U.S. It'll start at 5%. It will go up all the way to 25% if you don't stop these migrants who are moving through Mexico to then cross or attempt to cross illegally into the United States. These were not people trying to claim asylum at some port of entry. These were just people trying to illegally cross in a border section. And again, maybe drones saw this group. But think about the manpower it took to apprehend over 1,000 people. Think about the medical care necessary for those who made that trip, for the elderly, for the women who could be pregnant, for children. I mean, that's a real humanitarian crisis we could prevent by letting these people know there is a wall. You're not going to be able to get across it. There are legal ports of entry. If you want to go that route, you can. If you have an asylum claim, you can make it. If you want to apply for to immigrate to the U.S., you can. But with these walls and barriers, you will not be able to cross over. So you will not be apprehended by U.S. Border Patrol. You will just be stuck at the Mexican border, which I think would put a stop to a lot of this. I mean, listen to this. This is Robert Perez. He is the Customs and Border Patrol Deputy Commissioner. Just on Fox News. Take a listen.
2 years ago, Customs and Border Protection, our Border Patrol, encountered just two groups of over 100 illegal migrants or more. Last year, we encountered 13 groups. This year alone, we are already up to 180 groups of 100 or more. Again, this group of 1,000, larger than anything we've ever seen.
Larger than anything we have ever seen. Let me go to Layla calling from California on line four. Layla, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, how are you doing? Yeah, I called yesterday about the same reason. My big question that we're ignoring is why don't we ask Democrats, what is the reason you're opposing President Trump? Why do you want illegal immigration? Are you trying to change demographics?
Yes.
No one is asking that question. Everyone's like,
they don't want to answer that question because the truth is it is about changing demographics. It's a long-term play. Listen, I'm all for legal immigration. So if we had a major demographic change that was legal in certain areas of the country, some areas of the country we already have. You know, I spent time living in Miami where there is a large South American population who's immigrated legally or is here with green cards legally. So yes, I mean, there are demographic changes, but they're also proud to be in the United States. If they're Americans, they're proud to be American. If they are here on green cards, they're proud. They are excited to be able to stay and work in the United States of America. So I'm okay with that legal process. I have no issue with that, even if it does change demographics. That's part of having a country that's built on immigration. We've always had that kind of changing demographics in our country, a melting pot. But, Than, this is a long-term play. I think it's a very dangerous one. It's getting more and more dangerous by the day when you have the largest ever apprehension. But it is a long-term play because these Democrats think that ultimately if we're against the wall and we're for letting all these illegal immigrants in, one day they'll just become citizens and they'll just vote Democrat.
Yeah, and the proof of that, Jordan, is that the Democrats in both the House and the Senate initially asked the president to include DACA participants in his compromise. The president said, okay, I'll do that. And in fact, I'm even willing to talk about those who were DACA eligible. So a much bigger ask than Democrats made, Jordan. That was not necessarily popular with every Republican in Washington, D.C. What did the Democrats do, Jordan? They walked away from that proposal. So what they told the president they wanted in this package was not the truth. You're correct. This is a political play about demographics for them.
You know, we come back, we're going to get into some demographics and politics, too. We talked yesterday about the 2020 presidential candidates, the Democrats who want to take on President Trump. Now we're going to talk about the makeup of the U.S. Senate, 34 seats up for election. And that could really change things. We're going to talk about it when we come back.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're talking, of course, about this just massive apprehension at our southern border, the largest ever, 1,000 plus migrants, illegal immigrants from Central America, not Mexico, who were apprehended at our southern border. It's the largest ever apprehension in history by Customs and Border Patrol of illegal immigrants. And we're the staggering numbers that in April there were 109,000 apprehensions of illegal immigrants crossing our southern border. That's not including the people who are getting through, by the way. And now we've got reaction from the president. Because Congress is doing nothing, so the burden falls completely on him, even though he then gets criticized by Congress, even members of his own party. He's saying, you know what, Mexico, you don't stop these migrants coming in from Central America that have to pass through Mexico to get to our southern border, then we're going to start putting tariffs on the goods that you export to the U.S., which is your number one financial, it's the most important part of your economy. It's going to start off small at 5% June 10th, and it can go all the way up to 25%. So you don't want that to happen, Mexico, so you better do something about it. Guess what the Mexican president did? Dispatched his foreign minister last night. He's now in Washington, D.C. today. So the top foreign diplomat from Mexico in Washington, D.C., to try and work through this problem. The president doesn't want to have to put these tariffs in, but he realizes with some of these countries, it worked, you know, with Turkey, with Pastor Brunson on this migrant issue, to get their attention, sometimes it's the money, it's the economy. I mean, this is a president who gets that and understands that and is willing to take bold moves to get people at the table. And that's what he's doing. So these senators who jumped on this and said, oh, no, this is wrong, this is not good, including Republicans, I think they totally misunderstood what the president's goal here is. It's not to impose tariffs. It's like his goal by putting these carriers in the Persian Gulf is not to start a war with Iran. It's to prevent a war with Iran. The tariffs issue is not to ever issue those tariffs. It's to get this immigration crisis being solved better by Mexico, that Mexico starts playing a bigger role. I'm not sure they can play as big of a role as the U.S., but they can certainly do a lot more, and we're willing to work with them. We're also going to be talking about the Senate as well, because with 34 Senate seats up in 2020, this could have a huge impact. Let's say the House switches, because, you know, President Trump will be on the ballot. Assuming President Trump wins the election, this is just hypothetical. Likely then, it would mean, you know, likely the House could have a pretty good chance. We haven't gone through that yet. Pretty good chance of switching too. So no more Speaker Pelosi, and there'd be a Republican House. will Republicans maintain control of the Senate? Before I go to your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110, I want to talk through this with Than Bennett, our government affairs director in Washington, D.C. Than, there are 34 seats up in 2020 in the U.S. Senate. So the balance of power can be shifted because 22 of those are Republican, 12 are Democrats. So tell people, for Democrats to take control of the Senate, what do they have to do?
So the Democrats would have to flip 4 Republican seats and retain all of the ones that they have to have outright control of the Senate. Jordan, just, you know, as we enter this conversation, we'll maybe set this as a baseline. If they flip 3 seats, Jordan, that would mean a 50-50 split, and it would depend who wins the White House. So to outright win control of the Senate, they need to keep all of their seats, which is going to be tough because we can walk through one that's going to be particularly tough for them in a moment. But they would have to keep all of their seats and flip 4 seats that are currently held by Republicans to Democrats in the next Senate.
For Republicans to maintain their majority, just to maintain the balanced majority, what do they need to do?
So they would need to keep the Democrats from flipping more than 2 seats for outright control. If the Democrats flip 2 of their seats, they would still retain a 51-49 edge. And again, if 3 seats flip but President Trump wins, technically Republicans would still maintain control because Vice President Pence would cast that tie-breaking vote.
Now, you do think there's – I want to walk through some of the most competitive races out of these 34 right now. This can be changing, of course, as we get closer and closer November 3rd of 2020. But right now there are 4 very competitive races for Democrats. One especially competitive. Than, let's walk through that one.
Yeah, I think there's one race on either side of the line, Jordan, that pretty much every prognosticator in the country thinks that the other party actually has the advantage in, and that would be the seat held by Doug Jones down in Alabama. Of course, you defeated Roy Moore in a very contested special election. It looks like that is a seat the Republicans should be able to take back control. It's a seat that Donald Trump, or a state that Donald Trump carried by about 28 points, Jordan. But here is sort of the caveat I would make. There are going to be a ton of candidates on the Republican side. It's going to depend how bloody that gets. It's going to depend who wins that. I think Congressman Bradley Byrne is probably the favorite, but there's some other very well-known names. There's Miss America 1995, Heather Whitestone McCallum. She's considering running. Gary Palmer, Mo Brooks. Roy Moore is considering running again. And get this, Jordan, even Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida has said that he's considering moving over the border to run for this seat. So look, you got to see what happens in that primary first before we know exactly how likely a flip is there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most difficult would be, as we already saw, is that Roy Moore has got a lot of grassroots support in Alabama, but was beaten by a Democrat in Alabama, which is pretty tough to believe, except for what came out about his campaign. It was not a very good campaign, not a lot of good responses to the allegations made against him. We don't have to go through those. But I still think he would be an issue for Republicans if he ended up being the nominee.
Yeah, I do too. I think if you ask Doug Jones' campaign and you got an honest answer for them, I think they're clamoring for Roy Moore to be the nominee there, Jordan. I do.
Yeah, and that's interesting about Matt Gaetz. Making that move like that. I wonder if that would be to counter a Roy Moore type move, to have someone who is still very conservative, very popular with the conservative base. Again, would get that outsider status, but I'm not sure that matters as much when you've got the president on the top of the ballot. There's a few Democrats that are leaning likely. Let's walk through those just quickly.
Yeah, so 3 seats that I would put on the next tier for Republicans to target to flip. They'd be seats in Michigan held by Gary Peters, a seat held by Jeanne Shaheen in New Hampshire, and then Tina Smith's seat in Minnesota. And Jordan, if you look at those first two, the Michigan seat and the New Hampshire seat, those are both seats, states that were within 0.3% during the presidential election the last time around. So Hillary Clinton carried New Hampshire by 0.3%. Donald Trump carried Michigan by 0.3%. So you've got very, very close states in the last statewide election there. And then in Minnesota, it was a little bit broader. Hillary Clinton won that seat by about 1.5%. And actually, the likely opponent there, Karen Housley, to Tina Smith. She was defeated rather convincingly by Tina Smith, but I think Republicans in that state, Jordan, are looking at that as an opportunity. It's very unclear who the candidate will be in the end, but I think Democrats have to be a little bit careful about all 3 of those seats.
And if they're having to defend in places like Minnesota and New Hampshire and Michigan, it tells you a lot about the power of President Trump. doesn't it, Than? I mean, that these are states, again, that usually it's pretty easy for a Democrat in Michigan, a senator, even with a Republican on the a ballot, like President Trump, even in a presidential year. But he won Michigan, so you don't know, you know, puts things in question. Same with New Hampshire. I mean, in New Hampshire, you're looking at opponents that are pretty well known, potential opponents to Gene Shaheen, like the current governor, Chris Sununu, the state House Speaker, Bill O'Brien, and the former Senator Kelly Ayotte. So, I mean, these would be major players. That could be a bruising primary, but maybe one of them decides we'll be the nominee to take him on, get President Trump at the top of the ticket. I mean, again, these states would not be in play but for President Trump, would they?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I agree with you as well that New Hampshire is the most interesting one there, because New Hampshire, President Trump made that very competitive. Again, it was basically a statistical tie. And while Senator Shaheen is quite popular in the state, her numbers are good. Jordan, those three names that you mentioned, I would say especially Governor Chris Sununu. The Sununu name in New Hampshire is very strong. The apparatus there, the infrastructure there would be very formidable. So I think if it's a Senator Shaheen versus Governor Sununu race, I think that one's really a toss-up. And frankly, I mean, Senator Ayotte, she's won that seat before, Jordan. So, I mean, I don't want to discount her either. I think she could make it competitive. In Michigan, I think the party wants John James to run. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. And he did lose an election there the last time around, but I think he's very popular. And again, the president's numbers in Michigan continue to be very strong because the economic numbers there have bounced back so much.
I will tell you this, folks. You're not getting analysis like this on cable news right now about the U.S. Senate. They love focusing on President Trump. Obviously, the migrant crisis is a huge deal, but when you get 5 minutes to do news stories, you can't walk through things like this and really explain. And this is how the balance of power truly can shift when you're talking about these major issues like immigration. In our next segment, we'll get through kind of like the Republican incumbents who are in competitive races, and then some of the open seats as well that will likely be retained by Democrats and likely retained by Republicans, just so you know about your state, so you know what's going on in your state. We continue to take your phone calls as well at 1-800-684-3110. And final segment, we'll take calls on politics, especially the politics of the U.S. Senate. Do you live in one of these 34 states that have got either an open seat or a competitive a race for the United States Senate? We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110. And the illegal immigrant issue. I mean, this crisis. And it really is. It breaks my heart, because I know that those 1,000 people that got apprehended are not going through anything very good right now. And it's because of they were lied to make that trip all the way up through Central America, through Mexico, to the southern border. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at ACLJ.org.
So I want to take some calls, then we're going to get back into the Senate as well, because I do want to get through this. We talked about the most competitive Democrat races, and those, again, would be the most would be in Alabama, Doug Jones, who defeated Roy Moore, but there's one in Michigan, New Hampshire, and Minnesota. Next, we'll look at Republican incumbents that are in competitive races. But I do want to take phone calls as well, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Nancy called in from California online, too. Let's get Nancy a book as well. Nancy, appreciate you hanging on to talk to us on the air.
Sure. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm curious to know that any of these current officials who are up for re-election that are also choosing to run for president, do they get put on the ballot for both things in case they lose president and they get to maintain their seat, or do they just lose out completely?
Than, isn't that a state rule? I mean, in some states you can run for both, and in others you can't. I think that's
right. Sorry, Jordan, didn't mean to step on you there. Yeah, that's right. It's governed by state law, and there are various deadlines. In most of these cases, though, I would tell you that the deadlines are late enough that someone like Cory Booker, who is up for re-election, he's probably going to know his fate in the presidential primary in time to keep his name on the ballot. That's the most likely
scenario. So usually they know long enough in advance if they're not going to be the nominee to continue to file the paperwork to run for U.S. Senate, not pull that paperwork. But some states do allow, again, people to stay on the ballot even if they are running. I think that wasn't I think the most recent example of that, I'm trying to think, was
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul. Rand Paul, who stayed on the ballot as well. And and didn't Lieberman too? Did Lieberman actually leave the Senate?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how that worked. That was an issue, though, Jordan, but I'm glad you brought it up, because if it comes up early enough, states that actually want their candidates to appear on both, they can address it in some cases. That's what happened in the case of Rand Paul in Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, he got Kentucky to change the rules so he could run for both. So again, it's interesting because we allow the states to really run the election process, including the presidential election process. I mean, there are mandates by the federal government and the Electoral College, but the states then run those apparatuses. Let's go to Than, Republican incumbents that are in competitive races. So these are Republicans who could be in trouble in 2020. I think that the one that everybody who follows politics and has even followed the candidate, the senator himself, has realized a change in tone in him is Cory Gardner, who came out as a pretty conservative senator, has certainly tried to moderate his tone lately.
Yeah, he has, Jordan. Republicans are defending more seats, and there are more competitive seats for Republicans, but they don't have one like Doug Jones where they start with a really uphill climb. But I agree with you that Cory Gardner probably has the most significant uphill climb. He's running in a state that Hillary Clinton won by almost 5%, and I think that probably has a lot to do with the change in tone that he has heard. It's going to be interesting to see, though, Jordan, how President Trump treats this one, because, you know, honestly, I'm not sure that's the best strategic play for Cory Gardner. I think maybe tacking to the president, maybe sticking to his roots, those are the roots that got him elected, might have been a better strategy for turning out the base. Let's see how this plays out. I mean, there's still a long way to go in the process. You don't even know who he's going to be up against. And actually, if you go back to the previous caller's question, one of the candidates whose names continues to come up as a possible opponent is the former governor, John Hickenlooper, who is currently running for president and trying to make one of those debate stages. So let's see how it all shapes out. But yeah, Senator Gardner running in a state that Hillary Clinton carried by almost 5 points, that's probably their most significant seat to defend.
All right. And then next up would be Martha McSally. Now, this was one where she got appointed. She lost the Senate race in Arizona to the Democrat senator who's now there. But she's facing a likely opponent in a retired astronaut, Mark Kelly, who was the husband of the former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was horrendously injured in that shooting. He's pretty popular. She also has the military background as well. So it's rated, Than, as a toss-up. It kind of go either way. I think President Trump will probably play a big role in that one.
Yeah, I think that's probably a proper rating too, Jordan, because it's a state that President Trump carried by 3.5 points. But Martha McSally does have a couple of things going against her. You mentioned the recent loss to Kyrsten Sinema. So she's lost statewide just recently, of course, got appointed to the seat when John McCain passed away. Now she'll be running it for it on her own merits again. But the other thing that may be running against her, Jordan, is that opponent, Mark Kelly. He's got a very high name ID for a new candidate, for someone who hasn't won office before, and he also is very popular in the state. So right out of the bat, it looks like he's cleared the primary field, and I think that's going to be a very competitive race, probably right down to the wire on that one.
All right, next up, Susan Collins in Maine. She's kind of been a stalwart fan, and it's tilting Republican, but she could be facing real opposition.
So I think this is the most interesting one of this entire list, Jordan, because she has never really faced a challenge in a long time. She's been really crushing her opponents in Maine, and yet it's a state that typically votes Democrat for presidents. Three of the four electoral votes went for Hillary Clinton the last time around. President Trump was able to win the second congressional district, which they split those electoral votes. So he did win the second district. Three of the four votes went to Hillary Clinton. I think Susan Collins is going to be the favorite there, Jordan. But again, it's going to depend how formidable the candidate is that comes out, and then how strong President Trump plays there, and what Senator Collins wants from him. It's going to be an interesting race. I do think she's the favorite, but it's in play.
All right. And then Tom Tillis. You brought up Tom Tillis already once, since it's been kind of weak on some of the president's policies, but also in a state that has been a little tough for Republicans, North Carolina. What do we think happens there? And there's even a chance of a primary of Tom Tillis?
I think that's what makes North Carolina the most interesting. Of all of the seats, I think it's the one where the incumbent faces the most real likelihood of a primary. I think in the end, Jordan, it probably won't happen. But I know that both Mark Meadows and Mark Walker have kicked it around, especially after Tom Tillis dragged his feet a little bit on the national emergency declaration. I think the senators come around on that, Jordan. I think he will be the nominee in the end, and I think he will be the favorite. Trump carried the state by almost 4 points, but it's going to be interesting. That is one where you definitely have to watch the primary before you can turn your attention to the general.
All right, and then you've got David Perdue in Georgia. I mean, I would imagine he is able, with President Trump on the ballot, even if someone like Stacey Abrams decides to take him on, or another prominent Democrat there. He already beat one in Michelle Nunn, whose father was a very famous and popular Democrat senator from Georgia, moderate, defeated her. With President Trump on the ballot, it just seems like, even with Stacey Abrams, really tough for Democrats to take that as it stands today. I mean, there'd have to be a big shift in Georgia.
Yeah, this is these last two on the list, Jordan, are a tall hill for Democrats to climb. Stacey Abrams probably is their best bet there, but Donald Trump is very strong in that state. It's really on the list because these are the kind of states that Democrats are going to have to pick up if they do lose in Alabama, Jordan, if they want to get the majority of the Senate back. It's a tall hill to climb, but not totally impossible.
And then there's Democrat seats that are likely to be retained. There's eight of those in New Mexico, Cory Booker's in New Jersey, Coons in Delaware, Dick Durbin in Illinois, Ed Markey in Massachusetts, Jeff Merkley in Oregon, Jack Reed in again Rhode Island, and Mark Warner in Virginia. Those are not likely going to be, even if they're open, they're likely going to stay Democrat. And there's 16 that will likely be retained by Republicans: Kansas, Tennessee, Wyoming, Louisiana, West Virginia, Texas, Arkansas, Montana, South Carolina, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Idaho, South Dakota, Nebraska, Alaska. So even with really 34 up, Than, you think it comes down to a handful, like 4, 5, 6 races?
Yeah, maybe up to 10, but yeah, 4, 5, or 6. And in the end, Jordan, I do think Republicans are going to probably maintain the majority.
It will have a huge impact. Have a great weekend, folks. We'll talk to you next time.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at ACLJ.